What's up, guys? You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We record episodes and interview the very best experts from around the world and cover topics relating to health, success, mindset, business, and even social issues. And each week, we give you some of the best advice and information on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. Your elite life begins now. On today's episode, episode number 361, entitled, How to Use the Exponential Theory to Think Big and Achieve Massive Success, I chat with Aaron Baer. Aaron Baer, whose life purpose is to create 1 million exponential leaders, is the Wall Street Journal and USA Today best-selling author of Exponential Theory and the creator of the XMBA, Exponential Mindsets, Beliefs, and Attitudes Group Coaching Program. In today's episode, Aaron talks about how to think exponentially in your life to achieve unbelievable success. He breaks down what the exponential theory is, why all businesses must utilize it, and why the most successful people in the world are adopting its techniques in the 21st century. If you're wondering how you can use the exponential theory to see massive results in your business and in your life, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. For the highest quality supplements in the world, go to EliteLifeNutrition.com right now and check out our incredible products. Check out our men's multivitamin, women's multivitamin, vitamin C, turmeric, vitamin D, resveratrol, magnesium, zinc, calcium, NAC, and so many other incredible products. We have the best ingredients, the highest quality sources, and the right forms and dosages for all of our products. This is one of the things that separates us from all the other companies out there that cut corners and use cheap synthetic ingredients that your body can't actually utilize. We go above and beyond and make sure that everything we put into our bottles and capsules is what your body can actually use. So your body can take it in, it can absorb it, it can utilize the nutrients within those capsules and products and actually see benefits and results. So instead of just wasting your money on cheap synthetic ingredients and thinking you're doing something and getting something worthwhile, you actually spend the money and you can see the results that you actually want to see. So you feel happy. You feel more energized. You feel more alive when you take our incredible Elite Life Nutrition products. And also, once you start taking our products, you don't want to go back to taking the other products out there. Trust me, you will see a noticeable difference within just a few weeks of taking our products compared to other brands out there. So again, go to EliteLifeNutrition.com right now and check out the best products in the world. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from Elite Man Magazine. And my guest today is Aaron Baer, entrepreneur, strategist, and the Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestselling author of The Exponential Theory. Aaron, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Thanks, Justin. Glad to be here.
Yeah, can you just quickly dive into, I love this whole concept of the exponential theory. Can you just dive into where you came up with that? I know you have a very diverse background doing a lot of different things. Business strategy and all that stuff. But where did this concept come from? It kind of reminds me a little bit of Grant Cardone's 10X theory, but I'm sure it's also different and I want to get to learn a little bit more about it. But where'd you come up with this concept?
Yeah. So over the last 15 years, I've been doing innovation facilitation with startup companies and large companies like Daimler, Coca-Cola, Belfius Bank, the National Bank of Belgium, and taking their board of directors to different cities around the world. And, you know, part of it is really the wake-up call that we're entering an exponential age. And when you take a company like Daimler that, you know, candidly are very sheltered in Stuttgart and the different places they are, and take them into Shanghai or Singapore or Tel Aviv or London, New York, wherever it is, you get them outside of their comfort zone, and then you actually start to teach them that there are so many other companies that are exponentially growing that will overtake them in just about every area that they compete. And so it's learning the fact that no longer are they the best at what they did, and no longer were they winning the talent war, meaning the talent is now shifted to these new exponential enterprises and really, you know, focused on helping them win the game versus the, you know, the big companies that had always, you know, been able to attract the best people and get the most innovation out of it and everything. We're seeing that completely change. And that's part of taking them out to these ecosystems to learn is like, wow, things are being done very differently, faster, iterative, more iteratively. There's not the bureaucracy. They don't, you know, have all the red tape. They don't have the, you know, corporate culture that's holding back change. and candidly pushing forward so that they do create exponential change. And it goes to Grant Cardone. I actually used to own the website 10X ROI before. I think he owns it now. But 10X, you know, thinking 10X versus thinking 10%. You know, many companies are just like, hey, let's have 10% growth. Candidly, the 10X growth is what it's going to take to compete as we move into an exponential age. No longer can we think linearly, and we have to start thinking about a much larger population, a bigger business model than we've ever thought about before, just because everything has, you know, in a large part, most of these are digital companies that are disrupting that, where they're democratizing these different industries because they are digitized.
What was the first example of something that maybe caught your attention or gave you this real definitive belief that this exponential theory was the future? Was it something like, say, a Blockbuster Netflix type of thing, you know, 20 years ago? Or was there something even before that that kind of caught your attention?
Well, in the book, you talk about the Blockbuster, and actually I include Redbox, because actually Redbox disrupted Blockbuster before Netflix came along and really destroyed it. So there, you know, every industry is going through this digitization. Peter Diamantis and Stephen Kotler created this 6Ds of disruption. And, you know, it starts with digitization, then goes deceptive. Then you cross over into disruption, where you can actually see things being disrupted. Then you do demonetization, dematerialization, and then democratization. And if you look at every industry, that's a great model to kind of look and see where things are at. Like journalism would be probably the first industry that felt the pains of this. Largely, while we're on a podcast that people are listening to, this wasn't available, one, because we didn't have the digital technologies to do this. And we weren't, you know, now you have millions of podcasts that are honestly, you know, people are learning in all different ways, all different paths. That's been democratized. It's given a platform to everyone, where in the past, in certain industries, just a few people have held the controls over many of the things that happen in the industry. What we see today is that those controls have been turned over to the masses. And that's where there's a lot of people that are uncomfortable with the change that's happening, because it's happening so fast. The reality is, those that get more comfortable and think exponentially, don't think linearly, like as if we just need to grow a little bit to keep, you know, our company in the way place it is. What I've done over the last 15 years of my career is taught this idea of exponential, and even was entrepreneur residence at Singularity University and NASA Ames campus in Mountain View, California, where we would bring the most exponential leaders to NASA, and we literally would, you know, reinvent ideas to say go exponential. And part of all that is, how do we digitize different industries? And then there's 35 different exponential technologies all coming to the world right now, whether it's 3D printing or blockchain. And when you start merging these together and you start then, you know, throwing them into different industries, you start to see this explosion where these things are growing much, much faster than any other period of time in history. You're seeing companies, you know, very small companies able to take over very big industries very, very quickly. And that's really where exponential theory came about, is when I was helping big companies thinking more entrepreneurial, I just really learned is what you really need to help is everyone think more exponentially, because even small companies, it's really easy today to start a business and think small and carve out a little niche for to survive and actually to thrive. I created a word called thrivability, is, you know, beyond sustainability, is actually how do you thrive in a marketplace? Well, you have to think bigger than your competitor. And that's what we clearly see. The ones that win, you know, are the ones that are thinking the biggest about what they can accomplish.
How do the small businesses compete with those massive corporations? You know, you can see it oftentimes of like the small businesses, they're more flexible, they're more creative, they're more, you know, innovative. But at the same time, you got just a budget that's, you know, 100, 1,000 times more than your budget. What are these guys doing to think exponentially to beat out that competition eventually? Like, what are some of the things that they're doing that the big corporations aren't doing?
Yeah, I think it's just thinking lean, iterative, and agile, and just executing against an idea with purpose and passion. If you have a massive transformative purpose, like a purpose that's really, really big, one, you're going to start winning the war on talent. So you'll start slowly, you know, as you grow your concept and it kind of takes form, you're going to start attracting the right people into that. And that's, you know, my own company is called 1 million exponential leaders because it's an exponential idea. We're going to create 1 million exponential leaders. And what is I've already seen by talking about this in this way is several different people approach me saying, I want to be part of that. And we have this, you know, product I've taught in MBA programs, master of business administration at Thunderbird and ASU, and did that for about 10 years. And I learned that that's just teaching people how to grow up and be in middle management, where the XMBA that I'm creating is exponential mindset, beliefs, and attitudes, which is really the leader of the future, is the ability to think exponentially, not to think linearly, not to think, how do I actually just survive this, but how do I thrive in this? And I think that's part of a new mindset that's needed, that, you know, you have to take risks. It's actually more risk not to take a risk today than there is to take a risk. So, you know, these small business owners that have an idea, and I often get challenged, like just about any industry I can take and help people think through what's going to happen in their industry 5-10 years from now, and how they can be there at the front of the industry versus one that's a laggard to adopt the technologies that are coming into that industry. But every industry is fair game at this point when it comes to technologies. And it's always fun for people as they get into this XMBA program to kind of think about how they apply these technologies and how they apply this really thinking, you know, exponentially to whatever they're looking at. Because it's, you know, it takes about the same amount of energy to think big as it does to think small. And I'd actually even say it takes more energy to think small because you get caught up in all these little things. Where if my purpose is to create 1 million exponential leaders, then the decisions I make every day are like on this podcast is like, if we impact one or two people on this podcast that they actually think bigger and they solve a big problem, I'm on my journey. There's no better way that I can spend my time than here. And it also fits into the mission, the massive transformative purpose that I'm creating. So when I go to make decisions of how I spend my time, it becomes very, very easy, which I think most small business owners, their biggest probably issue is the habits they have, you know, and around mindset, beliefs, and attitudes is they may have the right goals, but they don't have the right habits to create those goals. So in our coaching program, we really focus on eliminating, you know, kind of these self-limiting beliefs from the past, unlearning behaviors, reprogramming so that they don't have these fears about the future. They don't have doubts and worries, anxiety, and stress about the future. So we get them into mindful where they can actually create exponential thinking every day. And that's part of a process that I've created in my coaching program that ultimately will help people get to this next level that they're looking for to really, you know, level up. And then candidly, when you're in an exponential leader, you're going to outgrow whatever your goal is. Like someday I will outgrow 1 million exponential leaders and I'll have to create a bigger goal because I just was determined and kept focused on that goal. You know, maybe it takes me 10 years, maybe it takes me 20, maybe it takes me 50, but regardless, it's, you know, it's a worthy endeavor. And every time I turn someone into an exponential leader, you know, all of a sudden you're solving big problems in different industries, you know, really creating change that's needed in the world. That, you know, we're kind of going through a lot of different change right now, which people are, you know, having a pretty hard time accepting all the different change. And that's why we have so much resistance and cancel culture and all these different things, because we're so inundated with information at all times from all different angles.
Yeah. I got a bunch of questions. I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit, but what are a couple of the other, 35, I think it was disruptive technologies. I'm just curious, what are some of the other ones besides 3D printing and blockchain? That seems like a lot, 35.
Yeah. Robotics. You know, there's a fundamental layer that we all know. Social media is one of those,
yep.
You know, really the internet. But once you start building on that, you start getting into, quantum computing, you get into, you know, you have augmented reality, you have virtual reality, you have the metaverse, then you get into synthetic biology and some other areas that are, you know, a little further out on that timeline, but right now are actually being created. And you start to look how biology and technology and communications are all merging. And that even goes to the idea of, if you look at Tesla Elon Musk is someone I highlight in this book, and I've studied a lot about how he's thought big just about every industry. He really puts out these long-term massive transformative purposes, whether it was Tesla saying, you know, hey, we're going to create the fastest car, and then, you know, then we're going to reinvest that and build a very luxury car. Then we're going to reinvest that and create the Model 3, which is now going to take over the market. And now that the world's largest car company by market capitalization, because that he had this massive turn. Same with SpaceX is, you know, in the book, I invent this kind of term Mars shots, because I'm sure you've heard of moon shots at Google and, hey, think like you're going to go to the moon. Well, Elon Musk said, what's better than that? I'll colonize on Mars in 2040. It's such a big goal. And now you have SpaceX literally delivering people to the International Space Station, privatizing space, which was unheard of a possibility. So whether he succeeds or fails, the fact that he has thought bigger than anyone else, and he's applied that just about every industry that he's gone into, and even his investment in Twitter and, you know, redefining, you know, censorship and communication and different things, you know, he's very much just like a doer, and he's going to iterate and see how to get there as quickly as possible, even though he's very much focused on very long-term goals. He's just had the ability to kind of keep track of that. Bill Gates said something that probably kind of summarizes this best. Most people overestimate what they can do in 1 year and underestimate what they can do in 10. So if you're going to be an exponential thinker, it's not just thinking about this year, but it's what can you do over 10 years, 15, 20 years. And that's where you look at Jeff Bezos and what he's done at Amazon. You look at Google, you look at all these companies. They weren't built overnight. You know, even Facebook wasn't built overnight. So, you know, we consider them, you know, success stories that happened overnight because we learned about them overnight. But even Facebook took about 7 years to really kind of get the ball rolling. From there, you know, it got to billions of people. But that's really the mindset around thinking longer term is part building the book, you know, building a platform that you can, you know, build off of. And so many of these exponential thinkers have taken the same kind of process steps to do that. That's what exponential theory really came very clear to me is like, oh, wow, there's a methodology behind this. And I'm living that methodology now with 1 million exponential leaders, which is my focus. Yet those million exponential leaders are likely to impact the world at 1 billion people or better. And that's a huge goal. And that's one that I'm confident if I keep working on that for the next 20 years, I'll make the biggest impact I can make that I see that I can make right now. Now my goals may get bigger, you know, as I grow. And that's, you know, to Grant Cardone and some other people, you see them growing up, right? You know, if you followed them, you see them growing in their own ability to make change as they kind of get the wins behind themselves. And that's all part of every one of these leaders at one time. Even Google, a couple years into it in 99 or 98, was invited by Excite to sell their search engine for $1 million. And they seriously considered selling it because they're like, well, we really don't have a business model. And, you know, I don't know that we can make it much bigger than this. So maybe we sell it and we just keep doing some interesting things like we're doing. Well, they didn't sell it. And the rest is history that they're exponential, where they've outgrown Google's business model of organizing the world's information. Now they're actually into robotics and home automation and all these different, but they're literally just all these companies now, if you look at what they're doing, they're applying new exponential technologies, using exponential theory to really say, here's where the future is going to meet us. And these ideas are so big that, you know, the average person walking down the street may not be able to wrap their head around it. But once you start seeing these different technologies, merging them together and applying them to different industries, you start to see some incredible opportunities. And Peter Diamantis, who is a big exponential thinker, you know, says in the next 10 years, there'll be created, you know, more wealth than in the last 100 years. And we're starting on that press. We're kind of on the precedence of that start. That's really the exponential world that we live in. And you're seeing all these new different business models and people literally creating billions of dollars out of nowhere, because we are moving at exponential pace. So part of that is, you know, let me galvanize 1 million of those exponential leaders and solve problems in areas, you know, everything you can possibly think of. You know, we can actually apply this mentality and apply technologies and some of these thought processes to create that.
Yeah. How important is it to have the person at the very top, like the Elon Musk, or for Google, it's like Sergey Brin, I think his name is, or say Bill Gates for Microsoft, or Steve Jobs for Mac when he was for Apple when he was around. How important is it to have like that one guy at the top coming up with these incredible ideas versus having like a group of, say, like a board, an incredible board team coming up with multiple ideas and bouncing those ideas off each other?
Well, I think if you look at these people that you just mentioned, and a lot of times they get credit for all the ideas, but it is because they're surrounded by some brilliant people. They've won that war on talent. Even Steve Jobs, which in the book, I give the premise, a lot of people say he's the most innovative person, you know, ever to be part of Silicon Valley or whatever. And I challenge it as he just had the best timing. But a lot of the technologies in the book, I share a story of a company called General Magic that was actually 17 years prior to the iPhone that invented the iPhone. And actually Apple invested in it back then. So Steve Jobs just waited to release the iPhone in 2007, where I got the premise that if you think about how fast technology has accelerated since 2007, because we have a smartphone in our pocket and we have all these sensors and different things, we're able to build millions of different business models within our pocket and take them with us and solve just about any kind of problem. We also digitized everything in that process. Well, Steve Jobs just had the right timing, but he actually took some of the technology that was actually built 17 years earlier and just applied it at the right time. And he saw this, you know, what I have a premise is that Nokia was starting to round off at that time. The top 20 phones were 19 of them were Nokia. Wow. They were trailing off. BlackBerry was another one that was for the first time moving out of the corporate world. And actually consumers were saying they wanted email. And, you know, before that, we didn't carry email around with us. We didn't even really carry text. We had these, you know, generic, you know, if you remember, you had to press the button three times to get a letter. It was really painful to send a text. So all that happened. And then the iPhone had this beautiful interface, but that interface had been around for a long time. They were able to just put it into the iPhone at the right time. Android, you know, Google invested in Android actually at about the same time. Android is actually 7-8 times bigger than iPhone, but the iPhone obviously has really driven a lot of the profits and everything because they own the whole vertical integration of the hardware and software, where Android kind of said any hardware provider can use this system, and they adapted it and grew faster that way. Is kind of the Intel inside versus, you know, owning the whole thing. But I think the point of that is these leaders that you mentioned, all of them are in the book, and we talk about, you know, they get credit, but it is someone that can galvanize a massive transformative purpose. At the end of the day, all these people, what they were able to do is put a goal or a dream out there so big that it attracted the right people behind them. And, you know, right now, if you go to Silicon Valley, the one thing that you'll learn is there is a war on talent. And that's where, you know, and it's also on speed. So the faster you can iterate and the faster you can get products to market and these things is how, you know, Facebook. And if you look at Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, and Google, you know, those five big companies, literally they have so much overlap in what they're competing for, but it's because they, you know, the employees have moved around, but the talent pool is just how do we execute as fast as possible? And how do we know that these different areas are going to grow exponentially. So it gets interesting when you look at it from that perspective, that if you want to grow bigger, it really is just creating a massive transformative purpose. Like, you know, my own goal of 1 million exponential leaders, took me a while to be able to say that comfortably and really mean it with purpose and passion. You know, I remember when I first started saying it, I'd say 1,000 exponential leaders, and I couldn't even get it out of my mouth because it was so uncomfortable. But that's where a lot of people say I'm crazy. Well, all those other people that we just mentioned were at one time had a lot of people said they won't do it and weren't crazy. What they all did was had the determination, persistence, and commitment to that massive transformative purpose that they actually got there. So they slowly grind, you know, every day they had the right habits to get there. And that's in my coaching program at the XMBA, we focus on the habits, not the goals, because the goals are always going to get bigger. And that's where, you know, if you're exponential, someday my 1 million exponential leaders, you know, I'm going to break through that. I'm going to have to create a bigger goal. And that, you know, who knows, that could be 5 years, could be 50 years. But if I keep working on it, I'll get there someday. And that's part of what each of these people have done. And that's where even Elon Musk is that example is, we're going to settle on Mars. You know, that's a Mars shot. you know, if he fails, you know, he's already succeeded beyond any other privatized space company there is. And that's where you realize is, you know, you can win the game along the way and enjoy the journey. It's not always, you know, getting to the final end goal. So,
yeah. And if he fails from the Mars route, he'll still end up on the moon anyway. So it's a pretty big win.
Yeah. But exactly.
How do you think guys like Elon Musk weigh risk versus reward and, you know, taking that risk and putting real money out into the game and potentially losing, you know, billions, if not trillions in the long run of like making a mistake and not actually being successful? I do remember as many of this great successes that Elon Musk had, I do remember I heard in some documentary that PayPal was doing pretty horrible in like the first couple of years he had it out. And also he had that other idea for Hyperloop where it was like the bullet train kind of thing and like that.
That's
suction.
Still going.
Is he still doing that? Because I remember hearing about that like 5-10 years ago, a long time ago, and I haven't heard much about it recently.
Richard Branson's kind of taken on that idea with him, and he'd open sourced that idea. But back to PayPal, and really as he exited PayPal, he got $180 million. And this will show you the mindset of either a madman or someone who's brilliant. It's a well-known story that he actually took that $180 million and he took all $180 million and he put it in Tesla, SolarCity, and SpaceX. And I think he put the most in SpaceX, the least in SolarCity. I don't know the exact numbers, but he actually wrote checks out that day that he got that money in and didn't have money to pay for rent. And I don't know if that's an extreme story, but you know, that just shows you the mentality of, you know, most people that made $180 million were pretty much would sit back and, you know, live the rest of their days out. What you realize about exponential thinkers that want to solve big problems is it's not about money. And he's likely to be the first trillionaire in the world, you know, from what he's created, and which sounds exponentially crazy. But when, you know, he went from really not even on the radar to close to $300 billion, you know, over the last 2 or 3 years. In fact, in 2018, he really was looking for a way for, if you remember, was heavily criticized and looking for a way out of Tesla because they couldn't meet production means. They were having issues. They were on that kind of crossing that chasm of performance and whether they could actually get there, and was heavily criticized. And that's when he did some different things where, you know, he got some fines from SEC. He just started doing some erratic things. And I think the pressure mounts on all of us. What he had is maybe a little luck and he stayed with it. His overall vision, he wasn't able to sell it, but he actually mentioned that he was interested in selling at that point. And he looked to Apple. He looked to have a meeting with Tim Cook at that time and some other people that, you know, could maybe bail out where he was at because he had so many mounting debts and different things. So that wasn't that long ago to him now being, you know, 4 years later, able to pretty much do anything he wants to do for the rest of his life and invest and kind of disrupt all kinds of different industries. That all comes full circle is every one of these entrepreneurs reached some point where they kind of continued forward with their old mission or their purpose and were to overcome, you know, all the doomsdayers or naysayers that, you know, were so critical of them. And Elon Musk hasn't really completely shrugged off all of his, you know, critics, but for the most part, he's kind of laughing at him now, you know, but that's the beauty of having a crazy idea that you fulfill. So it's part of being comfortable with the fact that there's a lot of critics that'll never do anything in this world. And if you want to be an exponential leader, you've got to stake your claim on something pretty big to be exponential. And that's part of the journey itself.
Do you think it was wise for him to do like those three major businesses all at the same time? I mean, obviously it worked out in the end because he's worth $300 billion. But do you think for anyone else, that would be a wise decision to kind of throw all your eggs into three giant baskets as opposed to sticking to like one business and growing that?
Yeah, I actually, funny, Gary Vee had said that, you know, today the hustler, you know, gets in as many businesses or whatever. And I totally disagree. I think, you know, Elon Musk was probably in a slightly different position where he had teams built around each of those. And he was really just investing his own money in what he was doing. And that's a little bit different, but you know, your everyday exponential leader, it's going to take a purpose and you're going to have to focus on that one purpose. If you believe in it, you're going to have to pivot. You're going to have to grow. you're likely going to have to take a step back in your role, you know, where you're not always leading all these different things. And it's knowing when and where to do that. So, my advice is really to find the one thing that you want to solve in the world, have it big enough that you can, you're willing to focus your life on it. And then every day it's not work. If you have three or four things you're hustling to do, candidly, you know, I used to own a digital strategy firm that we won awards and all kinds of things, but we had say 30 clients, on average. And so that meant I spent about 3% of my time on each one of those. I never gave any one of them my best just because I couldn't. So as I learned, probably my biggest mistake in life was to do what you just said, is because opportunity is always, I've always thought bigger. So opportunity always came to me. Hey, I need you to be an advisor in my company or whatever. So I'm like, oh yes, I can do that. So saying yes to all these different things actually held me back from my own purpose and held me back to getting to where I needed to go. So eventually, you know, I think as you, you know, there's people out there doing two or three hustles or whatever they're wanting to do, is finding that one that you're willing to stake everything on and just continually working on that. And candidly, the idea of having a B plan or C plan probably held me back, you know, I'm going to say knocked me back probably 20 years as to where I thought I could have been, just because I was able to create B and C plan. And I was always able to create my safety nets and everything, versus actually just saying, I'm going to do this, which I've now, you know, I've learned quite a bit. I'm 47, but I'm solely focused on this 1 million exponential leaders. And every consulting thing I do is about enrolling people in that idea of creating exponential leaders. So no longer am I taking advisory roles and all these other things. I'm literally shedding these opportunities. I want to work, you know, I'll be on the board of directors of something as long as it's an exponential company, and as long as I can help the whole company create exponential leadership. So it's given me a purpose and really given me, you know, really the bumpers and bumper pool to hit a strike every time, because now my decisions become very easy. And every day I spend, you know, it's really easy to make decisions, just like even to be on this podcast. You know, it's like, well, I have the chance of exposing someone else to being exponential, whether they go through me or there's so many other opportunities to become exponential. It's a journey that if more and more people get on, then I'm going to impact the world in the best way that I possibly can, just by helping others just think bigger about themselves.
Yeah, makes sense. Can you, going back to that original example of Blockbuster versus Netflix, can you just maybe break down real quick what it was that Netflix did so well compared to what Blockbuster was doing, and why they ended up crashing and burning, and, you know, Netflix blew up to the thing that it is today?
Yeah, I mean, so Blockbuster, the king of the game at that time was location, location. And Blockbuster, if you recall, was pretty much in every neighborhood on the corner. You know, had the bright lights, easy in and easy out. And every night they had all these, you know, kind of, I remember as a kid going there and, you know, standing in line because you're waiting for the one copy to get back from, you know, there's only four copies of the latest movie that you wanted to get or whatever. So you're digging through the, you know, the rentals that just came back in or whatever. That experience was one, an alternative to movie theaters. And it started the decline of movie theaters. It led to video games climb, because then they started renting video games and different things. But the intermittent step was really Redbox. Redbox came into the market and started creating, and it's the first of digitization, because we moved from VHS to DVD. And DVDs you could put in a vending machine and actually, you know, push out, because they were small enough to do that. And that little bit of digitization, even though it was still a product, allowed, now I can put a Redbox in front of every Walgreens and every McDonald's. And that's what they did. And all of a sudden, you are now competing against somebody that, you know, you didn't have the cost, the overhead of store, you know, the lights, the management, all the different things that it took to run a Blockbuster, air conditioning, heat, whatever it was, wherever you were from, that you had a Redbox that automatically did it all and it digitized it. And then your late fees and all these different things, because, and if you be kind, rewind, you know, the fact that you had to rewind these, or you got another, you know, they charge you another dollar. If it fell under your, you know, your seat and you gave it a month late, you owed them $100, but they couldn't rent it out during that time. So there's all these inherent poor business models built within Blockbuster's original model that, you know, in the book, I say the customer wins or the company dies. Redbox actually improved upon that. And then Netflix came in the market shortly after that, if you remember, of mail order delivery of DVDs.
Yeah.
And again, it was the DVD, the digitization of that, that you could slide it into an envelope and actually do that cheap enough. And they went and they actually did a deal with an, you know, with the mail, and they started mailing out DVDs, and they created distribution centers, and the rest wasn't history yet. They still had to disrupt themselves one more time as they moved from DVDs to streaming to be where they're at today. And that all was part of that whole first digitization of entertainment. And now everybody's TV has, connected to smart TVs that has, probably six or seven services, at least, Disney, HBO Max, Prime, Netflix, and then you got all these other channels. Netflix has, won because then they created original content that everybody wanted. They created the water cooler talk, as we talk about it, is every, they made people binge watch that we didn't even know we needed to binge watch. But if you wanted to be relevant in the office, you had to watch, these, 20 episodes and make sure that you're up on what's going on to be culturally, So I think all these different things Netflix has done, and part of why they've been so successful, and I write about it in the book, is they wrote, Sheryl Sandberg, who's the COO of Facebook, said Netflix wrote the 109-page PowerPoint that is the most significant and important document in Silicon Valley. And it was all around Netflix culture. So they enabled their people to be innovative. They enabled their people to really create all these, new mechanisms and enabled them to change. And they fought off that bureaucracy that creeps into every organization as they grow, where Netflix has had a steady stream of wins. And, this year it was Apple and Netflix that basically took a lot of the Oscars and different things home, which is, the traditional movie houses don't even have a chance anymore because they don't have the built-in revenue and audiences that these others do. So they can invest in these movies and such. So it's, if you think of the longer term of Netflix, they really had a strategy. They had some hiccups. I don't know if you remember when they changed the service from DVD to streaming, they lost and upset a lot of people because they split off the services and tried to make everyone pay for two different services. And there was a big revolt, and then they came back and actually lowered the price. But, there was hiccups and different things, but the exponential leader knows that they're going to make mistakes. They're going to have to learn from them quickly and move on to actually reach their exponential goal. And I think, Netflix is a great example of a physical industry where we used to go get, VHS and, became DVDs to now you literally just press a button and you have it in your home, which there's one Blockbuster left in the world, and it's in Bend, Oregon. But all the others have now vanished from this planet. So it shows you that nobody's safe, because at one time Blockbuster had 9,500 stores, so they were pretty much controlled the video rental business.
Yeah. It's crazy. It begs the question too, of what industries you think will be gone in the next 5 to 10 years. You kind of touched on the movie theater thing and how that kind of got taken away a lot by movie rentals, but they're still sticking around. But that's one that I kind of think will be extinct within like 10 years. I don't think a lot of people are going to the movies as much these days. Is there anything that you predict, like that industry, or even just totally random ones that come to mind?
I'd agree. Theaters are changing. I think, it's the idea that even during the pandemic, drive-in theaters could come back. It's the idea that records have come back. So there's always a niche for all these. It's just actually finding the exponential niche in a business to bring that back, where technologies of old are coming back because people are interested in, being different. And I think you look at the world, we differentiate ourselves by how our habits are. But every industry is changing dramatically. And candidly, they're all, finding a way to get into your pocket, into your phone. And that's, you look at Netflix, you look at all these different things. We've had a decline in laptops. We've had a decline in iPads. We've had a decline in, all these different technologies, TVs. The TVs have fallen way off just because we're accessing our media in different ways. So every industry is feeling these pressures of these, technologies that are pushing up on them. And in the book, I cover these different 35 technologies and how a predictive timeline of when these things will roll out. that becomes an interesting, you know, blueprint for every industry to see when will we be digitized? When will, you know, when will we be disrupted? And when will we democratize? Because I think in the end, if you look at technology, if it continues to drive price down, you know, the difference between rich and poor, as much as we see a difference in people's wealth levels, we still search for the same Wi-Fi and electricity for our phone. And, you know, if you look at when we have access to the same amount of entertainment, whether you're rich or poor, and that's an interesting paradigm to kind of look at. Yeah. You know, there's infinite amount of knowledge. For the first time, knowledge isn't bundled up in private universities that cost $400,000, but they're on podcasts like this that, you know, your viewers, you know, if they choose to spend their time here and they get value out of it, then they're going to come back again and again. And I think that's part of this new democratized equation that, you know, why have a few voices when the masses, you know, have something to say. And that's what I think's, you know, an interesting part of the world. It's never cost less to start something, but to really survive or actually thrivability in an industry, it really takes the ability to think big. Like, what are you going to think big to do more than anyone else in your current industry or in an alternative or a parallel industry? And I think that's, you know, another example that is Uber, is you wouldn't think Uber would affect the automobile manufacturers, but that really is one of the biggest, you know, effects is like people in urban areas, you know, young kids are not getting their driver's license. They would much rather just get Ubered around than actually own a car and have the rent and all the different things. So that dematerialization of that business model is an example. And Uber knows that they can't stand on the fact that if Tesla makes all their cars, you know, they go out and work during all the time that the owner is not using them, they completely disrupted Uber because they don't even have to have any drivers eventually when they get the level 5 autonomy. But, you know, you see Uber saying, okay, now we're going to go into, and they're investing heavily into drones and what you would call like, how do we get to flying cars, you know, so that we can, you know, get people and be the best in some of that. And you see some investments in New York and San Francisco around helicopters. So there's a lot of different things that you're saying, how do we actually make, you know, this, how do we improve the business model? If Uber is to get people A to B, let's fly them, because in LA, it could take an hour and a half to get a, you know, 10 miles where it may take, you know, 5 minutes by hovering. And I think that technology has come a long way in a very short, that's drones is another exponential technology that'll be used in infinite more ways than you can think of. Food delivery, all those different things are already being done in several different areas of the country. Testing. So it's not even like it's sci-fi, you know, a lot of these things that used to be sci-fi, like, you know, George Jetson or Back to the Future, you know, it's real stuff that's, you know, are being really tested and seen as their business model. And does it add value to the overall consumer? I think that's all part of exponential theory, is helping people think that way. And that's why we've created a series of different programs beyond the book. Exponential theory kind of introduces it. We practice it in exponential mindset, beliefs, and attitudes. And then we have the XL, which is Exponential Leaders Group Coaching Program, that we pair people into different coaching programs, depending on what they're most looking to get out exponentially. And we really help them just grow. So we enroll coaches, we do all that. But that whole ecosystem is to build the next generation of leaders. Because I really don't think people will be going to MBA programs as much as they were the, you know, the magic key in the past. They do nothing for people today. Maybe give them a little bit of a network, but candidly, you can get that a lot faster if you just go out and start a business and find the people that really care about your business. So it's, you know, it's not, you know, education, intelligence, you know, I think it's just getting out there and doing these things and learning, you're going to get there a lot faster than you ever would, you know, taking the route to say, I'm going to be the smartest person in the room. I don't think any of these people chose that. They just chose, like, let me do things faster than anyone else.
Yeah. You mentioned technology a lot, and especially, you know, getting on with the upcoming stuff like the drones and deliverability and, you know, things like, I mean, I could see UPS and FedEx and all that stuff using drones in the next few years. That's, you know, kind of what I envisioned. But as far as like the different technologies and all the stuff coming out, it seems like it can be confusing as to which ones you jump on, like as a business owner, as someone with a small business, which ones you should kind of go after and embrace and try to learn more of and get into the front of, because there's so many different ones out there. Is there something you can do to recommend, not necessarily a specific technology, but how to choose the right ones?
Yeah. When you look at all the different technologies that in my book, I kind of lay out these 35. One, you want to look at how quickly those are going to be adapted and what are, how are they being adapted in alternative industries? When you start to look at your own business model, you know, it's like, what makes the most business sense for that? So where can you add the most value? Like a food delivery company like DoorDash, they may or may not be investing in drone technologies, but, you know, candidly, if all of a sudden the restaurants all deliver food through the air, then people on bicycles or in cars delivering that are going to be completely disrupted. So knowing the next tranche of innovation is coming, and it's always coming, is to adopt, you know, the next, or, you know, skip a step and go to the one that's going to disrupt beyond that. Now, these are all bets, you know, candidly, going back to Blockbuster, if you remember Beta versus VHS, Beta was superior, VHS won, not because it was better technology. So you can go all through all history that the superior technology is not the one that always wins. It's the one that the consumers adopt the most. So, you know, I think part of, you know, all these different exponential technologies is when you add artificial intelligence and machine learning and you add some of these different components, which are all, again, exponential technologies, you see those companies raising hundreds of millions of dollars because the opportunity gets so much bigger because they grow and innovate so much faster. So once you adopt, that's part of being an exponential leader. When you're working with these companies that are being so disruptive, those, that exponential mindset, you know, changes your own ability to think how big you could be. And that's where, you know, when you look at a lot of the pitch decks of companies today that are raising hundreds of millions of dollars, they're like, we're an AI powered chat bot for the recruiting industry, we're this or that. So part of it is becoming the best in an industry about a certain technology. And that's what you're seeing, the ones that are raising, because it becomes a race between two or three companies that are going to solve that problem. And, you know, it's like Twitter is an example. When Twitter came out, there was 1,000 other Twitters that were 160 characters, there were 100 characters, whatever. Twitter won because Jack Dorsey was able to get the investors, and ultimately some of the celebrities, different people jumped onto that platform and they were able to beat out all these other technologies. But there's not a, there's an abundance of ability to start these companies. So again, it's just thinking bigger and obviously executing on that big vision faster than anyone else. So 1 million exponential leaders, you know, that's part of us, is how do we adopt technologies so that we can help exponential leaders get there faster. And that, you know, goes to, you know, I own part of a neuroscience company that works with veterans on PTSD and different things. And I've adopted some of those technologies to say, how could I help exponential leaders understand their potential better by removing some of the trauma and obstacles from their past, their limiting beliefs, helping them unlearn and reprogram some things so they can actually think bigger about their future. And so that their future doesn't have fears or stress or doubts or worries or anxiety, but it really has the ability to just say, hey, I'm going to think big and I'm going to create the right habits. And every day I'm going to improve those habits. And, you know, Navy SEALs, often, you know, if you look at a Navy SEAL, if they improve 1% a day, they get a 37x improvement. Well, that's what, you know, when we work with companies to go exponential, it is this micro habit that just gets better and better, that you actually start to improve where people could think exponentially, because it's daunting at first. If you're a small business owner in coin operated laundry, you know, it's hard to think how big that could be. But when you think 10 years from now, you know, how is laundry going to get done? You know, all of a sudden you could start implementing some different technologies and reverse engineering that to where you could raise a significant amount of money to disrupt the coin laundry industry, which there's a number of companies doing that. And I actually had a whole podcast on that topic alone, just helping that industry think through all the ways that it could go exponential. And it becomes infinite. And there's honestly, you know, this is one man's opinion. You know, the wisdom of crowds, it's, you get a group of people thinking about this and the ideas get bigger and bigger.
What's just a quick example of what might become of the laundry coin operated business there?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you take coin laundry, I mean, you know, if you look at location, it's always been important for that. So if you take the Blockbuster model, is, you know, people come and get their laundry done. The reality is, if you were to go to buildings and set up systems where you would just do people's laundry and deliver it back to them, you now avoid any location. You have one general location, send all the laundry there. You can do it cheaper. You can deliver it back to a building on certain days to companies. So you disrupt location as an advantage. Exponential technology, you know, there becomes, you know, drones, robotics, you know, all these different things that would say, you know, hey, we'll pick up your laundry and we'll deliver it on this day. And it all comes technology based. All of a sudden you're getting your shirts pressed for a dollar each. And you just, every week, all your clothes are just done through the air, you know, and it's going away and comes back. So that's thinking off in the future, George Jetson, you know, but the reality between here and there, and there is a lot of different business opportunities. And that's where, you know, every industry has an infinite ability to kind of reinvent itself and reimagine itself. And that's really where the book ends in exponential theory, is we're reimagining the world as now. There's, you know, for the longest time, a few people have made the decision for many. And, you know, I think in that process, we've had solutions that narrowly help a smaller group of people, when the real customer base is all people. And I think if we look at that, and we look at our products, we have to look like the community that we serve. And then honestly, better ideas will come back. And that's where doing the right thing is now we see in companies as paying dividends versus being persecuted for doing the wrong thing, is thinking about how do I actually solve everyone's problem. That's exponentially, if you're going to serve, you know, and exponential theory has this premise that, you know, if you thought about a business model that could serve a billion people, that's no longer thinking about one group of people. And now it's thinking about the universal, like how do you solve universal problems? And I think all of a sudden you become more conscious when you think about them. So in the end, you start making decisions for a broader audience. And, you know, if you're thinking bigger, then you're going to start appealing to that broader audience. And that's what you've seen at these massive technology companies, that they've appealed to, you know, broad demographics, that they didn't just focus on one group of people like so many businesses have in the past. And that's where I think that technology is a great equalizer. You know, everyone has the same opportunity to leverage technology. You know, there's a lot of things systemically in the past that haven't been fair playing field, that I think in the future, we have an opportunity to change all those with exponential leaders. Because if you start thinking bigger than all the problems we have, then a lot of those small problems go away.
Absolutely. Real quick, before we wrap things up in a moment, what does your daily exponential thinking look like in terms of what you're actually doing when you wake up? What are some of the thoughts that you have? What are some of the practices that you might do?
Yeah. So every day, I mean, I wake up and, you know, I have went through a program called Optimize by Heroic. That is a program that helped me create a daily ritual, an AM ritual and a PM ritual, because you can manage your start of your day and your end day. You usually can't manage your middle of your day very well, but, you know, I have practices coming into my day around meditation, around, you know, just getting my mind clear. I really work to sleep 8 hours plus. Believe that rest is a really big important part of it. I schedule exercise into my day every day. I schedule, you know, and this is all before I actually think about technology, because I think even though technology is this great opportunity, you can use technology or technology can use you, and you can get abused by technology or you can abuse technology. And I think having a good relationship with it is like during my day, there's nothing better than I can do than be on a podcast with you to share my message, share my story, get people to believe in 1 million exponential leaders, get people to believe in the XMBA. I often go and meet with companies. I have several different Zoom calls. I'll schedule meetings and different things with groups all around, you know, companies that want to become exponential and how we would help their whole company become exponential leaders. Because once you start creating this belief system, then everyone starts thinking bigger, then everything becomes possibility. A lot of times in a company, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So my day is just going out and talk to as many people as possible. And then all these other things, if you look at my social media and different things, I've automated a lot of it. I've gotten teams in places where those are small things to me, So I don't spend my time doing those. You know, I'm spending my time talking to you, having a good conversation about where the future is going to be, because I'm optimistic about the future, because we have a lot of promising technologies to solve different problems. We're having some really hard conversations now in every area, you know, politically and not. And I think part of that is actually realizing that, you know, we should do things better, and the opportunity to make money is in doing it better. So, you know, when you pair those, then people get real excited about exponential theory. That's why I hit Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestseller. And we're excited about the future of our exponential mindset, beliefs, and attitude course, as well as our XL exponential leader coaching and our coaching program, where we're actually certifying other coaches to be part of our program. Because if we're going to serve a million exponential leaders, I need an army of people that are out coaching and sharing this in every industry there is in the world, because, you know, every industry is going through a revolution right now. And the one thing that's certain, if you look at even the largest businesses, all of them are continually changing their business model. Even Apple is moving to a subscription model from actually selling products, which, you know, the car companies are going to move to a subscription model where if you lease a Tesla, you have to turn it back in at the end because they realize the value of that product being refurbished more than what they're doing now. And I think there's a greater thinking when you look at SaaS, software as a service model. You're seeing that adopted in every area, where you'll eventually just have a subscription for, just like you do for your phone, unlimited. You'll have a subscription for unlimited transportation. You'll have a subscription for unlimited housing someday. You know, all these different things, because we're really breaking the barriers down and democratizing every business model possible. Unlimited food. I mean, we're talking to a restaurant today about how they could create a subscription where people could unlimitedly eat at that restaurant. And what that would be, and how that would work. So, you know, the idea is to get a certain number of credits and different things. So they're moving in a direction to democratize every different business model. And I think that's what's interesting when I talk to traditional businesses, is just changing the business model can literally make a light year step forward, you know, as far as serving their customers, but also just growing. Like, we've seen, you know, 600% growth of some of the companies we work with, you know, just by changing the business model and how people consume the service. And I think that's, you know, part of, in the book, I talk about Adobe burning the boats. If you remember, Photoshop used to be a package that people would get. Now it's all in the cloud and they don't even sell products. They were really one of the first companies to do that. And since they did that, they've 10x their revenue, and they've created stable, and they've eliminated digital copycatting. If you remember, you could buy Photoshop pretty much anywhere in a box because people were copying those discs and selling them. Now you get it through the cloud and you get unlimited services, and they've gone into all kinds of different areas to increase their profit margins. But that digital cloud model, is that platform model, is kind of part of exponential thinking. So there's very few businesses that have made that complete transition, but the ones that have done dramatically better. And that's where there's a lot of other companies, the baby boomers that are about to retire. As the next generation of leaders come in, they will have to be reinvented or they will die, you know. And that's what we say, the customer wins or the company dies. And that is such a true statement today. When you even look at investment banks and the financial crisis in 2007, 2008, you look at, you know, all the ones that failed, it's because they, you know, were greedy and playing one side of the market. And that's where we're no longer too big to fail. You know, we're seeing, you know, giants kind of shrinking pretty quickly just because they're not thinking about how to serve the customer better, and they're not doing the right thing. So it's an interesting time that we live in. And, you know, I think the Romans probably said the same thing 2000 years ago, 1500 years ago. But, you know, today we just have so many different things coming at us that it's just infinite opportunity. There's one thing that's certain, is there's never been a time to be alive with more opportunity.
Absolutely. Aaron, it's been a great interview, man. I really appreciate you coming on. What's a send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience, and then a place our listeners check out your book and your work?
Yeah, I think, you know, part of being exponential is honestly looking at, and this is what we do in our coaching program, Exponential Mindset, Beliefs, and Attitudes, is looking at your past, understanding the trauma, limiting, regrets, beliefs. All those, you know, if I look at failure, and one of our concepts is failing is important to be successful. But I'll reframe it in a way is that we don't fail. We either learn or win. And the only time we do fail is if we don't learn or win from what we're doing. So it's about constant iteration, being agile and moving forward. When you're creating your future, you're creating it from now. So every day, you asked about that daily ritual, is waking up to understand how can I impact this day in the best way possible? Using that kind of Navy SEAL strategy of, can I do this day 1% better than I did yesterday? What was the wins that I had yesterday? What were the learnings? I don't really talk about failures. And then I just iterate on that. And I continually do that. So every day I get into bigger and bigger conversations, like, with your podcast and really growing this audience of what I'm doing. But I think most importantly is to look at the future and understand that what we see the world now is everything that we are looking at is going to be reimagined in the next 10 years. And candidly, probably 50% plus of jobs are going to disappear and be reinvented into new careers. It's not to say that, I think there's this whole idea that robotics and all these things are going to take over and nobody's going to have jobs. It's that we're going to need new skills for the future. And we're already seeing that where the Great Resignation and, you see right now in history is there's more jobs available now than there ever has been. And I think for the longest time we've had scarcity. If we keep moving towards technologies, there won't be. But we're creating an abundant world that we're solving bigger and bigger problems. As we include more and more people into that, we actually create much bigger markets. And I think that's something that people often underestimate is thinking long-term and then thinking about a bigger market than what they're in. And that's the opportunity. And that's really demanded of any exponential company to grow into the future. So the parting ways is, you have the opportunity today to really think big about your own life, and it takes less energy than thinking small. Find an industry that you're in love with and then figure out how to reinvent it, reimagine it, and apply a couple technologies to it. Write a business plan that has AI and machine learning, and venture capital be interested. If you have a longer term thinking and you can think bigger and you create a business model that's repeatable, predictable, scalable, and sustainable, you can raise as much money as you want to do that. So that's something that I've raised hundreds of millions of dollars in my career just because I focus on those four points and have helped a lot of other companies do that as well. But it is just thinking bigger. And when people see that on stage and you talk about that, you start to attract that. So when I say 1 million, I will create 1 million exponential leaders. That's my life's purpose. That's what I'm working on. And it's a bigger than life goal, and it's uncomfortable saying, and that means I'm on the right path.
Nice. And where can our listeners get the book or check out your website?
Yeah, so you can buy the book on Amazon, Exponential Theory, The Power of Thinking Big. You can also go to exponentialtheory.com. You can find me on Instagram, Aaron Bare, AaronBare, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and also website, AaronBare.com. So that pretty much any one of those, you can get a hold of me pretty quickly.
Awesome. Aaron, thanks again for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks so much, Justin.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do. And that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.